You're listening to The 21st. I'm Julian Haida. This spring will mark 75 years since the end of the Holocaust in Europe. As many as two-thirds of Europe's Jews were murdered in the years between 1941 and 1945, 6 million in all, as well as hundreds of thousands of Romani, Gypsies, Africans, Poles, Ukrainians, Russians, members of the LGBT community, and so many others. But in the decades since, there's been at least a dozen other genocides worldwide, depending on how you define genocide and the scale of it. That's why in 1990, the state of Illinois mandated Holocaust education in 5th, 8th, and 10th grade classrooms. Joining us to discuss the state of genocide education and research are Linda Bauer, Executive Director of the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation.
Hello.
Hi. Brian B. Kahn is a retired educator who now runs the Federation's Holocaust Education Center. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
And Christy Yoder, Executive Director of the Center for Genocide Research and Education. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you.
Now, I should also mention, now that we have you here, that the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation is hosting a number of events in the next couple of months, including a seminar that asks how far is too far when it comes to teaching children about genocide. That's on Thursday, March 19th at 9:30 a.m. at the Illinois Education Association in Champaign. Information on that can be found at cujf.org. Now, Brian, I want to start with you. There's only 6 states that require Holocaust education in schools. Illinois was only the 2nd state in after California to pass legislation to that effect in 1990, largely owing to organizations such as yours. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that's not more common nationally? Why don't more states teach the Holocaust?
That's a big question. And we've been thinking about that ever since Illinois did become the first state to mandate it. And last that I read, and not to take exception here, but there were 12 states that have a mandate to teach the Holocaust. There are others that have less significant rules. And I think that since Illinois became the first, there was a great amount of interest in the early 1990s. It was, and many people don't know this who aren't in education, you know, it was the multicultural era. It was the era of diversity and of looking at things through the eyes of other people. And the museum was built, Schindler, and in Washington, D.C., Schindler's List came out. There were the Shoah Foundation was recruiting people all over the world to interview survivors and rescuers and other people that were involved, and there was a huge amount of interest in the topic, and a number of organizations got in on that, the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, of course, the Shoah Foundation in Southern California, Yad Vashem in Israel, and the museum in Washington, D.C., also the museum in Skokie. So I think that's...
The Illinois Holocaust Museum.
The Illinois Holocaust Museum, yes.
Now, I mean, so it seems like that interest was certainly there 30 years ago. But just to follow up, like, is there a way of knowing that at least, you know, outside of these institutions that you mentioned in the classroom, that the kind of education that you know, should be taught about this history is being taught, that is being taught on the local level?
How do we know?
Yeah.
Well, we don't. It's a mandate. Mandates often don't have any teeth to them. We don't test on the subject. It's not part of the Common Core, which, you know, we all went through so many years ago, which really dictated what a lot of districts were going to start doing with their curriculum.
We do know that, you know, we have teachers locally that come to workshops. We have, our center has books and a lot of teaching materials that teachers take advantage of. Is every teacher doing it? No, but many teachers are doing it. And I think as an organization, we look at ways to meet the needs of today. You know, 40 or 30 years ago, it was different than it is now. Unfortunately, there are more genocides to think about and teach about. But, you know, how do we teach not only what happened, but what's happening today, and also How does an individual respond? And I think that's what's really important, and we're looking at that as we look ahead.
Sure. Now, I mean, Linda, I'm trying to think of some of the times that I learned about the Holocaust in school. I mean, I was a student here in Illinois after these laws were passed, but I went to a private school, so I didn't, you know, the law doesn't apply, doesn't mandate private schools to teach the Holocaust. Your parents were Holocaust survivors. Mm-hmm. I mean, my grandparents were Osterbeiters. These were prisoners in Nazi forced labor camps. And mm-hmm. I guess that means that, you know, folks like you and me learned from our family's oral history. But that there's a lot of personal trauma there, and you don't really get a kind of systemic analysis necessarily. So I'm wondering why you think that Holocaust education should be taught in a kind of a more formal classroom space.
Because it's human relationship education. It's not just history. We have to teach everyone, but particularly young people, how to respond when they see abuse, bullying. You know, it starts hopefully at an individual level to have compassion to others, to respond and not be afraid to speak up. We all know about that saying of Martin Niemöller, who said, oh, they came for the socialist, I wasn't a socialist, so I didn't speak up. They came for the trade unionists, I was not a trade unionist, so I didn't speak up, and you know, et cetera. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. I think our society these days, I'm talking about American society, tends to be rather self-centered. And even teaching kids how to stop a bully on the playground, or at least to report it, I think that's a step forward.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's very interesting, especially since the preventive aspect of this is it seems so important and so personal. Christy, I wanted to bring you in the conversation as well. Your organization researches genocides and education efforts around them. Why do you think that preventive philosophy is important to incorporate?
Yeah, I agree with Linda. I really feel like it does start at the individual level, and we need to learn to have compassion for one another. From a prevention standpoint, if you get to know people that you wouldn't normally interact with, it's a lot harder to demonize them. This process that's called othering in genocide.
Absolutely.
When you have a name and a face and a story, suddenly you have a personal connection, and that makes genocide thoughts, things that lead up to genocide, a lot less likely.
I see. And I mean, I'm wondering, I mean, people think about, you know, the way, I mean, you mentioned the othering, the kind of the steps that lead to genocide. Linda, you mentioned, you know, I wasn't, you know, that idiom that they didn't come for me, therefore I didn't care. What are some of the ways that people can look out for, you know, a possibly impending an impending genocide or something that might obviously nothing will compare to the Holocaust as it was in the last century. But as we read a newspaper, how do we tell the signs that something is amiss in learning from that history? I mean, Brian, do you have a thought, or Linda?
Well, if I had the answer, I'd win the Nobel Peace Prize. But I did make some notes about thinking about this, because even my parents were both in concentration camps and were survivors. The rest of my family was killed. So I'm very close to this. So even I have trouble trying to figure it out. But just even locally, for instance, some things I've thought about. One is, as was said, is outreach. Be part of the community. Federation has had events that people come to and socialize and mix, and there's not the other feeling. The other thing is to form alliances. I know one of the local rabbis here has been very involved in the Interfaith Alliance with Christians and Muslims and so on. And again, they're part of the community. Another thing perhaps is to be politically active so that you have a larger role in saying what happens. And again, the idea of education and teaching us to value our fellow man, whether they're in the U.S. or in another country.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Julian Haida. We're talking about Holocaust education with Linda Bauer, Executive Director of the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation. Brian Kahn is a retired educator, chair of the Holocaust Education Center at the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation. And with us on the line is Christy Yoder, Executive Director of the Center for Genocide Research and Education. You know, I wanted to ask, you know, there's a lot of people who invoke history and kind of try to apply it to today. Christy, I'm sure you saw that last summer the National Holocaust Museum condemned some members of Congress for comparing immigration detention facilities near the U.S.-Mexico border to concentration camps. Now, the National Holocaust Museum suggested that analogies to the Holocaust are irresponsible since nothing can compare to the scale of the Holocaust. But Yale historian Timothy Snyder in Slate wrote that the museum's stance makes, quote, nonsense of the slogan never again, and it provides moral cover for ongoing oppressive policies. How do you think people can sensitively navigate like the tangible history of Holocaust and genocide with other acts of injustice that might happen now or more recently or possibly in the near future?
Yeah, I really feel like keeping the focus on the Genocide Convention, which outlines what constitutes genocide, can really help navigate that, because the Holocaust certainly was the largest genocide to occur, and it made us aware of other genocides. But in order to prevent genocide, we have to understand it. And so in order to do that, we need to study all genocides and see what is there in common between them that we might be able to use to prevent genocide. Hmm. And it is a difficult task to navigate that sensitively, but I think that it can be done.
Now, Brian, I want to ask you, since you are an educator, how do you teach that? I mean, we've talked about themes around genocide, around the Holocaust. Obviously, we know the Holocaust didn't begin overnight. There was Kristallnacht, localized anti-Semitic violence that kind of led up to the Holocaust. How do you talk to young people about this, to be sensitive to some of these things that they might be seeing in their day-to-day lives and know that something might be amiss without desensitizing them at the same time?
I think, and I want to build on something that Linda said, I too have hundreds of family members who perished in the Holocaust. I speak to students when I go out to classes about my family, about being Jewish, so they can better understand some of the materials that they're reading. Because often many of the students that we speak to, whether it's in Rantoul or Danville or Westville, are not familiar with Jewish tradition. So when they're reading Night by Elie Wiesel as freshmen in high school, it's very hard to comprehend. So we share about religion. I think that's a very important thing. We share about family. We share about family's experiences, as Linda said. Yes, the history is extremely important. It's there. The path to sound pedagogy teaching the Holocaust is there. It's on the museum websites. It's on the ADL website. It's part of Echoes and Reflections, the ADL's big electronic program. We know how to teach the Holocaust. We just need to follow those patterns. We need to talk about prejudice and discrimination as an introduction. What does it mean to stereotype? What does it mean to use someone as a scapegoat, to try to understand these human relations, and then to look at the historical building? How did this happen in Nazi Germany? Hitler did not invent anti-Semitism, and yet students often walk away thinking that because they don't have the whole history. And I think the same thing needs to happen with teaching other genocides. I don't think we've gotten past the point of trying to grapple with the Holocaust as the one main genocide that we used to teach about. In 06, the mandate changed under Blagojevich. Now we're going to teach comparative genocide. And the mandate calls for superintendents and principals to provide professional development and materials and preparation for teachers. But it only happens in small pockets. It's not happening all over. And I think that's one of our big challenges. We do have materials in our library that address additional genocides. Yes, most of what we do happens to be about the Holocaust in speakers and educator training, but we have purchased materials and we have worked with teachers in teaching about the Cambodian genocide and teaching about the Rwandan genocide. It's just a slow buildup because I think we're still dealing in many ways in our own mindset, we're still dealing with the Holocaust as this model of how to teach genocide. But it's not a secret how to teach it.
Yeah.
It's out there, and we know how to share that with teachers.
Sure. Now, Brian, I want to ask you, in your experience, why do you think some people are not so willing to take this up as a subject matter? I mean, there's fear, obviously, but there's a great deal of politics surrounding this. I mean, in Florida, there was last year a case of a principal who was fired for denying the Holocaust. Now we only have a minute, so I know this is a whole big conversation. But why do you think that people are so afraid to teach this?
I think they don't understand. I think that's a lot of the problem. They don't understand the details behind it, the specifics behind it. And yes, they get involved in political struggles within any community. Also, you know, national struggles and standards. How much time do we have to teach this? And are we prepared to teach this?
Well, we should definitely continue this conversation another time.
Yes.
We're
out of time, and the teachers are out of time, and that affects us all.
Well, people can learn more at cujf.org. You have a lot of events that people can join the conversation at. And thank you for sharing your perspectives and your stories. I've been speaking with Linda Bauer, Executive Director of the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation, Brian Kahn, who runs the Federation's Holocaust Education Center. And with us on the line was Christy Yoder, Executive Director of the Center for Genocide Research and Education. Thank you all for joining us and discussing the sensitive topic.
Thank you so much for having us.